Hello, and welcome to ExoLore, the show that helps you imagine other worlds, but with facts and science. I'm your host, Moya McTeer. To give you a sense of my credentials, I'm an astrophysicist who studies planets outside of our solar system, which are called exoplanets. Well, I actually study how those exoplanets are affected by the motion of our Milky Way galaxy. I'm also a folklorist who specializes in building and analyzing fictional worlds, and this podcast is my way of sharing those worlds with you. It's time for another world-building review episode, except it's more of a stream of consciousness reaction than it is a review. I'm going to be talking about one of my absolute favorite movies, perfect for the holiday season, Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas. Also, I think you'll find that the episode is actually more about holidays in general than it is about the movie itself, but it's my podcast, so I can do what I want. Before we get to the movie, I want to congratulate you on making it all the way to the end of 2020. I can't possibly know what this year has been like for you, but there's plenty of data available that tells me that this year probably wasn't your best. Personally, 2020 has brought me a lot of existential dread, deep depression, and some heart-aching loneliness. But the trash goblin that was this year also urged me to get back into therapy and do a lot of self-reflection that I think has led to significant personal growth. I really hope that you're able to find some of your own silver linings from this year and carry them with you into the next. If you find yourself feeling hopeful about the new year, that's fantastic. The world isn't gonna become a utopia like automatically at the stroke of midnight, but we have multiple COVID vaccines that are being distributed as we speak, or as I speak, because this is a podcast and not a conversation. And that's a cause for celebration. Maybe some of you will be starting exciting new jobs next year, or you're excited to wrap up a project you've been working on for a while. Shout out to all my fellow 2021 graduates. Hold on tight to that hopeful feeling, because we still have a while to go before we reach that light at the end of this shitty tunnel. If, on the other hand, you find yourself feeling anxious about ringing in the new year, I get it. The idea of setting a resolution or getting a fresh start when I know that I'll be just as stuck inside tomorrow as I was today, well, it feels pointless. And maybe it will help you, just like it helps me, to remember that New Year's is totally made up. A year is the amount of time it takes Earth to orbit the Sun once, astronomically speaking, which takes about 365 days. I say about because there's actually been a lot of struggle throughout human history based on the fact that our year doesn't break down nicely into exact integer number of days. It's really frustrating, but that's why we have leap year. So that's cool, I guess. Where was I? All right, but the Earth's orbit is more or less circular. In fact, with an eccentricity of 0.17, Earth's orbit is actually the third most circular in the entire solar system, behind Venus and Neptune. And eccentricity is a measure of how round an orbit is. Zero means perfectly circular, and one means that it's hyperbolic. So the thing is flying out of the solar system or the galaxy or whatever thing you happen to be orbiting. But no matter what, our orbit is round. We don't have a hyperbolic orbit, so the new year can start whenever the fuck we want it to. In fact, there have been several New Years celebrated every year by different cultures around the world. Chinese New Year falls between January 21st and February 21st, whenever the new moon of the first lunar month is. The Islamic New Year begins around November, and the Thai New Year is in April, and the Ethiopian New Year happens in September. The Jewish calendar actually marks four different New Years according to the Hebrew Bible, or the Torah. It has one New Year for tracking the reigns of kings, one for tithing of animals, one that determines pretty much when certain fruits can be eaten, and then there's Rosh Hashanah, which is the New Year for years, that usually happens in September every year. My Jewish partner said that the other New Years sounded familiar from his time studying the Bible in Hebrew school, but that Rosh Hashanah is the only New Year that most Jews celebrate and acknowledge. Still, I like this system of having multiple New Years. So many parts of life operate on their own schedules, independent of each other, and it makes sense to have multiple New Years, just like we have the school year in the U.S. that starts in September, even though the other year, like the year, starts in January. In some cultures, New Year's falls on a different date every year. often because they use a calendar based on the motion of the moon. These are called lunar calendars. In other cultures, New Year's is always on the same date. These are typically cultures that use a solar calendar, so they track the motion of the sun, or cultures who have lined their own calendars up with the standard Gregorian calendar that, you know, sets like the date that we actually use. Like if you go to timeanddate.com, it's going to be using the date that's defined by the Gregorian calendar. Speaking of the Gregorian calendar, take a moment to think of a guess for when it was put in place. Like what year? Okay, well, I'll be honest and tell you that before I did the research for this episode, I genuinely believe that the Gregorian calendar has been around for more than like 1,000 years, and that's because I'm apparently woefully ignorant of Pope history. It turns out that the Gregorian calendar most of us use to track time these days was introduced by Pope Gregory XIII in 1582, which is way more recent than I expected. We've only been using this calendar for like 600 years, right? 560 years? It hasn't been a long time. But before 1582, the Catholic Church, and presumably most of the places Christianity and the Holy Roman Empire had reached, used the Julian calendar, which was introduced by none other than Julius Caesar in 46 BCE. BCE stands for Before Common Era. It's like the opposite of AD. January 1st had already been the new year for a while by the time Caesar introduced his calendar, and the reason Pope Gregory, I'm tempted to call him Old Greg, but I don't know him like that, so I'm not gonna. Pope Gregory adapted the calendar because Caesar didn't account for leap days. I can't say anything about that. If I were designing my own calendar, I wouldn't have accounted for leap days anyway. It's really hard work. But also, Caesar didn't design it himself. He, like, commissioned an astronomer and mathematician to do it for him. So it's not Caesar's fault that there wasn't a leap day. But, you know, skipping one leap day for a few years, it doesn't make much of a difference, but it really starts to mess stuff up after 16 centuries. So Easter was falling on the wrong date, Christmas was falling on the wrong date, no one knew what date it was, and so Pope Gregory was like, nah, let's stop this, I'm gonna hire another astronomer and mathematician to make a new calendar, and now we have leap year, which has some really interesting rules. I'd definitely suggest looking up like the actual rules of leap year sometime, because it's not just as simple as every 4 years we get an extra day, because on years that are like divisible by 100, so, you know, in 2000 or in like 2100, we won't have a leap year. It's amazing. The math is actually really cool if you want to look it up. Okay, back to what I had planned. It's absolutely amazing to me that people had the gall to create new calendars before the internet. Like, there was no way to instantly tell people that there was a new calendar to use, which led to a lot of confusion at the time. People didn't agree on what day it was when the Gregorian calendar was introduced. It was just, it's a fun time. Fun time in history to look up. I definitely recommend it. Anyway, the point of all of this was to say that time is a construct, and people have literally been making up calendars for like 10,000 years. So don't feel pressed to make any big life changes just because some old guy in a robe decided 500 years ago that you should. All right. Now we can get to the topic of the episode, Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas. If you haven't seen it, honestly, I'm a little confused. I feel like the Venn diagram of ExoLore listeners and TNBC viewers should just be two overlapping circles. But just in case, the 1993 cult classic tells the story of Jack Skellington, the king of Halloween Town, which is different from the Halloween Town with, like, the witches. It's a very different place. But Jack, the king of Halloween Town, just doesn't get the same thrill out of scaring people as he used to. Like, that used to be his whole job, is to come up with ways to scare and surprise people, and now it's just not lighting the fire under his butt that he needs. So Jack, he's like walking through the woods feeling sorry for himself. He finds a magical portal in the woods that takes him to Christmas Town, and he doesn't understand anything about it, but Jack becomes obsessed with celebrating Christmas. Hijinks ensue, fueled by miscommunication and false interpretations based on different perspectives and experiences. In other words, it's a classic comedy, but covered in like a spooky, creepy, Halloween-y veneer. If you're interested in learning more about how the movie was made, Netflix has a show called The Holiday Movies That Made Us, and they have an episode about The Nightmare Before Christmas. I watched it last night, and I learned a lot of things. It's actually like a really interesting story. For example, the movie is called Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas. And when you think about it, like, it has that classic Tim Burton style, but Tim Burton didn't direct it. He didn't direct it, and he was never really on the set, like in the studio when they were making the film. He had very little to do with it except for coming up with the idea originally. But a stop motion animator named Henry Selick actually directed the movie, which makes a lot of sense once you learn that TNBC was the world's first feature-length stop-motion animation film. No one had ever done before what they were attempting to do. In fact, the crew took more than 100,000 frames over 2 years, moving each character's figurine just like a few millimeters between each shot. If you don't know how stop-motion animation works, they have these little figurines on these miniature sets, so they had to hire a miniature set designer, which is really cool. And then you move the little figurines and you take pictures of them. So that 100,000 frames is a lot. The movie is 76 minutes long. And if you do the math, it turns out that there were about 30 frames per minute, like 30 pictures per minute. It's actually an incredible achievement. I am so in awe of the people who worked on this movie. Tim Burton had supreme creative control over the film, even though he was almost never in the studio, like I said, when he described his vision to the film's art director, Dean Taylor. Burton's only rules for the appearance of Halloween Town were that there should be no right angles. He said that if you were to run your hands over the top of Halloween Town, you should get cut up because everything should be so jagged and sharp. So no right angles. And also, the only colors Taylor was allowed to use were black, white, and orange. And upon hearing that in the Netflix show, I, of course, immediately went to YouTube to rewatch the movie's opening scene and check if Taylor had followed the rules. I spotted a little bit of green and maybe some purple, but that could have been a lighting trick. If there are any lighting designers listening to this, please let me know your thoughts. Also, your work seems like pure magic to me, so kudos. But this is ostensibly a world-building podcast, not a lighting podcast, so I should probably talk about some world-building. Honestly, most of my world-building complaints when I consume fiction are about things that just don't make sense given the rules of the world. I guess other people might think of them as plot holes or inconsistencies, like when Diana and Steve use a stolen museum plane to fly from DC to Cairo in Wonder Woman 84. I just watched it. I have a lot of thoughts. I'm sorry if that was a spoiler, but you also should have watched it on Christmas like everyone else. Should is a bad word. I'm not trying to judge you. I'm sorry. But that scene, it's just not realistic given the rules of our world. But my propensity for following rules makes it pretty difficult for me to analyze worlds that are supposed to be nonsense, which is how I would describe the world of TNBC. When I say world building, I typically mean constructing a coherent environment and history and culture for a world. But for Tim Burton, or more likely for Rick Heinrichs, who is the visual consultant Burton tasked with bringing his creative vision to life in the studio while he was gone, Tim Burton was working on Batman Returns. Rick Heinrichs was also working on Batman Returns, but he wasn't directing it. Anyway, so Rick Heinrichs... I got lost. Sorry. But Rick Heinrichs, the visual consultant, for him, world building seems to be based on feelings or vibes or atmospheres. So Halloween Town is dark and spooky and foreboding. And the citizens there are gruesome creatures who spend all year preparing for Halloween. That actually sounds like a pretty dope life. And they self-identify as not mean. This may be less detailed planning than I usually put into my worlds. Also, maybe I'm projecting. I wasn't there. All I'm going off of is the fact that I've seen this movie like 10 or 20 times in my life and that Netflix mini documentary that I watched. So I don't know what was going through their heads. But it made a world, nevertheless. And that world might have some rules in it that I can try to identify in a game I call Overthinking Tiny Details in a Piece of Fiction Meant to Entertain. Yeah, I know, it's a horrible name for a game, but it's a great way to distract my anxious brain so it doesn't fixate on things that happen IRL.
I spend way too much of my time on the internet these days, just opening tab after tab as I go down a deep Wikipedia rabbit hole trying to learn about stuff that ultimately doesn't really matter, but I'm bored and I'm curious. And I would really love it if my boredom and tab opening would actually do some good in the world. And it can with Tab for a Cause. Tab for a Cause is a browser extension that lets you raise money for charity while doing your thing online. Whenever you open a new tab, you'll see a beautiful photo and a small ad, and part of that ad money goes towards a charity of your choice. You can do that charitable work as a member of Team Exolore by signing up at tabforacause.org/exolore. They'll ask you to sign up for an account, so you'll put in your email, a password, create a username, and then you're doing it. Every time you open a new tab, you're doing good for the world, and what could possibly be better than that? So join Team Exolore by going for tabforacause.org/exolore.
Okay, I'm looking for small details, or maybe you might even call them clues, that tell me that could tell me what some of the rules of this TNBC world are. So since I'm looking for those, let's start with the opening scene of the movie, where a narrator, voiced by Patrick Stewart, who was probably filming, like actively filming, the sixth season of Next Gen at the same time. Amazing. But he says this, which I will try to say in my best Patrick Stewart voice, although it will still be terrible. "'Twas a long time ago, longer now than it seems, in a place that perhaps you have seen in your dreams. For the story that you are about to be told took place in the holiday worlds of old. Now, you've probably wondered where holidays come from. If you haven't, I'd say it's time you begun." Like, he actually does, like, get all, you know, grand at the end of it. Anyway, that's not the point. While Patrick Stewart is saying that, the shot zooms in on a forest clearing surrounded by trees with strange doors carved into them, each one seeming to represent a different holiday. There are seven of them. They are Valentine's Day, St. Patrick's Day, Easter, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Halloween, and what looks like the 4th of July, maybe? From the scene, we can learn a few things. We learn that there are holiday worlds that are distinct but still accessible from our world. Obviously, the doors in the clearing transport you to those different holiday worlds, but I think the clearing actually exists in every world. Like, this is the one magical place where all the worlds, ours and the holiday ones, overlap. I say that because the opening scene tells us that Nightmare Before Christmas is a frame narrative, a story within a story, like The Princess Bride or 1001 Nights. In fact, my only real complaint about the movie is that the narrator doesn't come back at the end to complete the frame. It's really frustrating. So we start the movie in our world, because that's where the narrator is, right? Like, the narrator lives in our world, the human one. And then we go through one of the doors to Halloween Town. We go through, like, the door that looks like a jack-o'-lantern. It opens in the tree and we go through it and we are in Halloween Town. And when Jack comes to a clearing and makes his way to Christmas Town, there are six doors in the clearing, not seven. So it's not like Jack leaves Halloween Town, enters our world's clearing, and then, like, walks across the clearing to go over to Christmas Town. He can just use his own clearing. And maybe I'm belaboring this point, and maybe it's only interesting to me, but I love thinking about places that overlap between different worlds. As a kid, I developed a fascination with fairies and all things fae that I still have as an adult. Like, my favorite fantasy books have to do with fairies. And when I say fairy, please know that I mean F-A-E-R-I-E. To me, that's like very different from F-A-I-R-Y. So that's like, picture that spelling when I say the word. A common trope in fairy stories is the idea of someone crossing over into the fairy realm from our world for one of a few reasons. So maybe they were in the wrong place at the wrong time and they just got sucked in to the fairy world. This happened to Nora, the protagonist in Emily Croy Barker's A Thinking Woman's Guide to Real Magic. I remember reading that book in one of my interstellar medium classes in my second year of grad school, and I don't mean like I read it later that day, but I was literally in the back row of the classroom reading this book like one of the cool book nerds. Cool book nerds. I was really not popular in high school, but I remember thinking that the book was pretty good. Sometimes people are brought to the fairy realm, like they are brought to the fairy realm by an actual fairy. This happened to Oisin, the legendary Irish warrior who was picked up on horseback by Niamh, a literal fairy princess, and he was taken to Tir na n Og, which translates as Land of the Young, in what I think has to be one of literature's weirdest drive-by booty calls. Like, she just rides up on her horse and says, "Hey, I want to take this warrior guy back to live with me." And then he's there for like 300 years and he doesn't age and he comes back and everyone he loves is gone and the world doesn't look the same. And that sucks. But also, he got to live in the fairy realm for 300 years. So I don't feel bad for him. Still, others find themselves in the fairy realm because they had spent their entire life, or a significant portion of it, looking for places where our two worlds touched. Places like fairy rings and stone circles that mark a place of powerful liminality. Alex E. Harrow's 10,000 Doors of January has characters who kind of do this, but they're not specifically looking for fairy worlds. If you have examples of this, I would love to see them. Hear them? Read them? I want to know about it. So yeah, I think it's really interesting, albeit possibly unintentional on the crew's part. But I think it's an interesting feature of the Nightmare Before Christmas universe that all of the worlds share this magical holiday clearing. I think it's really neat. To be totally honest with you, I didn't actually rewatch the entire movie in prepping for this episode because it's only available on Disney Plus and I already spend enough money making this show. But I did watch the opening scene and the musical numbers on YouTube repeatedly, probably like an embarrassing number of times. So that didn't give me much to go off of, but I was able to pick out one interesting thing about the world in the songs that I think tells me about what one rule might be. In What's This, Jack notes that absolutely no one's dead. Like, it's noteworthy that there are no dead people in Christmastown. But then later on, in another song, a young child says he hopes Jack isn't dead. And this reminds me of a conversation I've had with my partner about smells. Please go on this journey with me. So I have a really strong sense of smell, like strong enough that I once got into an Uber and asked the driver, "Oh, how many dogs do you have?" instead of, "Do you have dogs?" And then he very embarrassingly said, like, "Oh, I've never really let my dogs in my car," which meant that I was just telling that man he smells like dogs. And I'm sorry to that Uber driver if you're listening. I'm sorry. It's my secret superpower, but it also means that I smell everything. So I've adopted a rather generous definition of bad smell. To me, something smells bad if it smells wrong. So a foot that smells like a foot, or cat poop that smells like cat poop, these aren't bad smells as long as they smell how they're supposed to smell. And this ties back to Nightmare Before Christmas in a roundabout way, because it seems like it's okay to be a dead thing in Halloween Town as long as you're actually supposed to be dead. And I don't know what that means for Halloween Town citizens' view on the afterlife, and I don't know if that means that the dead citizens can die twice. I also don't know what that means for citizens like Sally, who were like created. Like, Sally was built. She's like a Frankenstein's monster. So I don't know if she's alive. I don't know if she can die. I don't know if other people would be sad if she died. There's just a lot unanswered here. But I'm not going to hold that against the film staff and crew because they had enough work to do just making the damn movie. Really, no one had ever done a stop motion project like this before. So I'll admit that it probably wasn't high on their priority list to construct a complete and coherent afterlife system for the residents of Halloween Town. Huh. If I had to construct one, I mean, like, if I had to construct a heaven and a hell type system for Halloween Town, I don't even know if it would be a heaven and hell system. That's not the only system that exists. There's no heaven and hell or in Jewish religion, for in Judaism, for example. But, you know, I I'm going to leave this up to the audience. I usually put a prompt at the very end of the episode, but tell me what you think the Halloween Town afterlife would be. Like, if you lived in a world that was, that just embodied Halloween, what would the afterlife be like? Would there be an afterlife? Like, what do people think about the afterlife on Halloween? Traditionally, it's supposed to be the time when the veil between this life, this world, and the afterlife is the thinnest. This is just me going on a rant. Please tell me what you think about the afterlife system in Halloween Town. Okay, so I wasn't very successful in finding rules to describe the Nightmare Before Christmas world, but I did say it was a nonsense world, so I would have trouble finding some rules. So instead of that, instead of rules, let me leave you with some quick questions I had after watching the movie. The first of which is, what the hell does their afterlife look like? If they have a hell, just, I want to know. My other quick question, where is this forest with the holiday trees, with this magical holiday clearing? I actually did try to, figure out where it was based on, like, what the trees looked like, but that was a bad idea for a number of reasons. First of all, I have no idea what trees look like. I have horrible plant blindness, which is especially bad considering the fact that I grew up in the woods. Like, I grew up in a place called Oak Forest, and I genuinely don't think I could identify an oak tree if I tried. It's really sad. Also, I don't think the animators were going for botanical accuracy when they were making this movie, so I probably wouldn't be able to identify anything anyway. Quick question number two. This is actually some slow questions. Why does Jack know what mistletoe is in What's This? Like, when he goes to Christmastown for the first time, why does he know what mistletoe is but not snow? He calls it white stuff in the air. Like, I feel like if you know about one, you should know about the other. Quick question number three, or four, or three if you're zero indexing. Why does Jack trust a group of children to kidnap Santa Claus and then get upset when they didn't do exactly what he wanted? They're trick-or-treaters and Jack didn't give them any treats. Like, he should have known what was coming. Quick question. How many people live in Halloween Town? Like, I'm just really curious. Are all kinds of spooky creatures represented? Like, I saw witches, I saw werewolves, I saw vampires, but are all spooky creatures there? Are all of the different types of vampires from cultures around the world represented? I know probably not, because this movie was, made in the U.S. by people from the U.S. Like, it's very deeply embedded in U.S. culture, but I would love to know. My last quick question. Where do holidays actually come from? So the movie shows us that there are seven different holiday worlds. Again, those are Valentine's Day, St. Patrick's Day, Easter, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Halloween, and the 4th of July. Obviously, a very U.S.-centric selection, but that makes sense. But the narrator implies that the story, the Nightmare Before Christmas movie that we are about to watch, the narrator implies that that story is supposed to explain where holidays come from. But unless you actually believe that we have holidays because they seeped their way into our culture through magical tree doors, the movie doesn't deliver on its promise. So here are some things you might not have known about where our holidays come from. Some of them are obvious, like the 4th of July. I don't need to tell you about that. And also, I like to think that if the movie were being made today, it would have featured Juneteenth instead as a more accurate choice for Independence Day. Juneteenth is a national holiday now, y'all. Isn't that exciting? Sucks that it took this long, but I'm going to take my wins where I can get them. Thanksgiving also has pretty obvious origins, at least the way Americans do it, but harvest festivals, you know, the time of year where you are reaping your harvest and you have bounty, like for the first time in a while, and you sit down and you eat and you have a good time with your family, those types of festivals have been celebrated by pretty much every culture that has ever existed, you know, since humans developed agriculture about like 10,000-12,000 years ago, and then finally had crops to harvest. That's kind of a necessary prerequisite. But yeah, that's Thanksgiving. It's easy to say that Valentine's Day was made up by greeting card companies to sell more stuff, but Pope Gelasius I established St. Valentine's Day to commemorate a martyred saint in 496 AD, so at the very end of the 5th century. Although there is some disagreement about exactly who the saint was and what he did, because there are a few different stories that seem to fit the bill. They're interesting stories. A lot of the saint's stories are pretty interesting, so maybe I should do an episode about that. No, just look it up. It's cool. but the holiday, St. Valentine's Day, it actually goes back way further than the end of the 5th century, at least to the ancient Roman holiday Lupercalia, which promoted health and fertility. On that day, it was in the middle of February, so like around the same time. But priests would go around lightly slapping young women with blood-soaked goat hides. And I know that sounds absolutely disgusting, but it was a good thing, so they thought, because that would make the young woman more fertile in the upcoming year. And at least based on my readings of ancient Rome and like what I see in TV, which I'm sure isn't always or is almost never an accurate portrayal, but people back then just like seemed to really want babies. I definitely wouldn't want a priest slapping me with some bloodied goat skin that would make me pregnant, but you know, to each her own. Also, men and women on this holiday, Lupercalia, according to my admittedly brief research session, men and women would be paired up, and some of them resulted in marriage, so that's cute. So yeah, it's like Lupercalia, it's always, this day, mid-February, has always been about love. Similarly, St. Patrick's Day was officially established by the Catholic Church in 1631, but had been celebrated in Ireland for centuries before that to honor their legendary figure, St. Patrick, of course, who is said to have introduced Christianity to Ireland. Not good for the Druids, but, you know, they seem happy with it today, mostly. It's done some bad things for them. The 1970s and 80s, they were a rough time. Moving on. Christmas. Christmas, Halloween, and Easter are all adapted versions of ancient pagan holidays associated with the winter solstice, harvest, and spring equinox, respectively. In fact, all of those different times, winter solstice and spring equinox have been used as New Year's by different cultures throughout history, so bringing it back. And the harvest time for the ancient Celtic people, that was also considered like the new year. November 1st was the new year. So that's cool. Halloween is probably the youngest of them. It was derived from the Celtic festival Samhain, or it's spelled Samhain, but I took Irish in college, and pretty much the only thing I remember from it is that Samhain is not how you're supposed to pronounce that word. So Samhain, which was commonly practiced in Ireland around 2,000 years ago. And so the others are much older. I guess the moral of this episode, aside from the fact that The Nightmare Before Christmas has nothing to do with Tim Burton. Johnny Depp isn't in it, so it's not marred in the same way that other Tim Burton classics might be based on their recent actions. So the other moral of this episode is that holidays are made up, or they were taken. Stolen seems like too strong a word, but like that's kind of what happened. They were taken from other cultures and changed to suit the dominant culture at the time. And that doesn't mean they aren't special. It absolutely doesn't, because of course it's a good idea to have days dedicated to different values, you know, days that are dedicated to being with your loved ones, or expressing gratitude, or you know, other eating good food, other things that holidays are supposed to do. And I don't want to yuck anyone's holiday yums here, but if you struggle with holidays sometimes, I know I do. This Christmas has been one of the best Christmases because I didn't have to worry about the stress of dealing with family. I just stayed home. It was really nice. But if you struggle with holidays sometimes, hopefully this episode can help relieve some of the pressure, because holidays are only as important as you want them to be. They have power because we believe in them, like so many things. So if you don't want to believe in it, you don't have to. That said, Happy New Year, or Happy Saturday. Either way, I hope you have a safe and relaxing day tomorrow. On another note, my birthday, which is not a national holiday, but I will treat it as such, is coming up. On January 8th, I will be turning 26, entering the last year of my mid-20s, and all I want for my birthday is to share imaginary worlds with more people. So, if you feel inclined, if you want to get me a little present, please take your favorite episode of ExoLore and share it with one other person this week. It would make this almost birthday girl so very happy. But enough about me. If you want to start a creative project but need a little help getting started, here's another prompt. I know I gave you a prompt earlier in the episode, but here's a twofer. Imagine a world characterized by your favorite holiday, and it absolutely does not have to be one of the holidays shown in the clearing in the movie. So think about your favorite holiday, or think about your least favorite holiday. That'd be a fun exercise. But what does a world embodying that holiday look like? What do the people there value? How do they spend their time? So take your imagination and turn it into a story, a drawing, a song, or whatever you want. And then, if you're comfortable, share your work on Twitter or Instagram and tag ExoLorePod. That's ExoLorePod. Or you can send it to ExoLorePod@gmail.com. If you want to support my world building work, the first way to do that is to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. I started reading them recently. Someone proposed. It was a fake proposal, but know that I am giving you an equally fake yes. We can be married. I love you all. Thank you so much for listening to the show. But continue to encourage other people to rate and review if you haven't already. It's free and it does make a difference. Second, you can support me on Patreon. Your monthly support would make it possible for me to continue working on this passion project of mine. So please head on over to patreon.com/goastromo if you're able. I want to thank Steven Reisig for giving me the amazing cover art, and I want to thank Purple Planet for making music free and available on their website so I can have intro and outro music. If you like this episode, be sure to share it with your friends and subscribe to the show, because that way you can catch me next time on another world.